The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What is up, my fellow addicts? It's me, Ralph Sutton, and hey, James Mattern.
Guys, this is a treat.
And we are doing an interview with a true punk legend. Brian Baker comes on the show, and James could not be happier.
I was so excited. I remember I almost fell on the bridge running that day listening to Bad Religion, Stranger Than Fiction, and I didn't bring it up to him because I didn't want to be a beta, but goddamn, it was a fun interview.
We do this every Wednesday, every Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern time. If you are a Bad Religion fan, you could have heard it 5 days earlier, commercial free at gasdigitalnetwork.com. Use the code SDR, get a 7-day free trial and 20% off and access to every episode we've ever done, along with about 20 other shows on the network. Or really, just continue listening where you are. Spread the love, get the word out. And here it is right now, the Brian Baker episode of the SDR Show.
This is the intro to the shit show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This is a hit show. Show me a tit show. Please, someone fuck the host. It's weed, I beat, it's hookers and blow. It's art, it's far, you need to know. The SDR Show. Let's go.
It is the SDR Show, sex, drugs, and rock and roll show. I am Ralph Sutton. If you look in my background, you see some clothes and stuff. Why? I'm, for the first time in 12 years, redecorating my apartment. So it looks a little wacky in here, but I'm trying to make it nice. I have not changed my furniture. By the way, James Mattern back on again. James, let me tell you this. Let my guest hear this. This is so anti-punk rock, it's not even funny. But I was a guest on a show almost 20 years ago called Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, right? I was one of the straight guys, not one of the gay guys. And they redid my old apartment 20 years ago. I brought all that furniture to this apartment. So I've had the same exact furniture for 20 years. I'm finally buying some new furniture. So my apartment's going to be in a little state of disarray for the next couple of weeks, James.
I'm willing to forgive you, by the way.
Thank you, Brian.
From over here. I don't see anything untoward. And, you know, okay, free furniture, you should squeeze as much life out of it as you can.
That's for sure. And I'm also giving away the furniture that I was given for free to friends in need of stuff. Someone already claimed one of the mirrors. Someone claimed the couch. So that stuff will live on.
You're giving back is what you're doing.
Yes. So, James, you know what, James? Let me say this. First of all, James, thank you for doing the show again.
Ralph, what a pleasure. I haven't seen you in so long. You look wonderful. The apartment, even with disarray, is great.
Right.
Nothing better than interviewing a punk legend with your house in disarray.
Right. That's true, too.
This is perfect. Yeah.
And then also, by the way, just to sound even more entitled, I literally just got back. I went to Iceland for the weekend to run a half marathon and just came back into town. So it just doesn't get any more white than that, by the way.
You're no longer. Yeah, we were punk for a second. That was the most bourgeois comment I've ever heard. I just got back from Iceland to run a fucking marathon.
Yeah, half marathon. But anyway, let's do this. So now, first of all, this is what's weird. We have a legend on the fucking show right now, right? Very few people that you put in the hierarchy of punk rock legend. But here's what's weird. And I'm just going to be as honest as I can, Brian.
Sure.
I work in rock and roll my entire life. Okay.
Yes.
I started out at the Limelight as a rock club promoter and L'Amour in Brooklyn as a rock club promoter. Then I ended up doing rock radio for almost 20 years. I had a show that was on about 100 stations. While I have nothing but the utmost respect for the legends of punk rock, and it is also fascinating to me because all the guys I did my show around heralded your bands and the bands of that like as the holy grail of cool rock and roll. Somehow it missed me, and I don't know, like, I know what it represents, that you are a founding member of Minor Threat, you're the guitarist in Bad Religion, you were in Dag Nasty. But here's the thing that's fascinating: I got more excited when I found out you were in Junkyard, because that's my fucking wheelhouse.
Yeah, that's the L'Amour, that's the whole thing,
right?
And, you know, Ralph, knowing this stuff is not required. You know, this is a subterranean legend. You have to kind of dig a little.
So. Right. And James loves punk to the utmost. So I'm glad that he's here. But I want to start just because it makes me happy. I was such a fucking fan of Junkyard. Those first two records, I loved. The one that cracked me up, which I don't know if there's any other rock song that I know of, that the last song on the first record, Hands Off, where the hook is, Baby, You Gave Him Head. I mean, that was one of my favorite lines in a song of all time.
David Roach had a lot to say, and that's my favorite song that he wrote. And I think, you know, it's sad because at the time, that was a little much to be a single.
Right.
And when I first heard that song, I was like, oh, good. Well, there's the single. I can get a Corvette like Mick Mars. But they didn't release it as a single. And that's
right. I mean, I wonder why with the hook, Baby, You Gave Him Head, right?
It's not profane. I mean, it's, you know, head is not a bad word. Right, I have one. Staircases. I had a staircase.
And by the way, Hollywood was a staple of mine. And then on the second record, All the Time in the World, great song. I mean, these are songs that, I mean, really, that's my era. I love that. I don't know why. Like I said, I love all these bands that you talk about, like Bad Religion and Black Flag, and I respect the hell out of them, but somehow it missed me, and I just don't know why.
Well, I think it might be, you might be a little younger than I am.
A little younger than you, but James is younger than me, so how'd that happen to you, James?
Well, so I'm from Vegas. The desert, we love punk. It's just, there's no way of hiding it. There's just, if you got beat up once in the fifth grade, you're going to listen to punk rock. And I got beat up like 8 times in the fifth grade. So it was all over the place. There was all kinds of divisions on which bands you were with. Like when you guys put out the Stranger Than Fiction album, you were either Bad Religion people or you were like Offspring and Green Day. And there was a huge distinction there.
Yeah.
I'll let you guess what side I was on, baby. I'll let you guess.
Yeah. I would say you're on the BR side of that particular.
Damn right, baby.
I was the Green Day guy. I loved them, and I still think they're great. What nice fellas.
Good to keep your own band on their toes, bro. It's a good
one. Yeah. Well, you know what it is, but I mean to solve this mystery, the fact is that when this stuff was happening and you were doing your radio show and doing the limelight, which I went to, I know exactly what you're talking about. It's because punk wasn't on the radar. They got put on the radar long after. I mean, it took 15, 16 years after I started doing it that it was even on a radio station. It wasn't a college station.
Right.
So it makes complete sense that you missed it. It wasn't mainstream.
But also, like, you know, remember like watching bands like the bands that I love so much, you know, the Guns N' Roses of the world, the Motley Crue, and like Nikki Sixx would be talking about it, how much he loved Bad Religion, you know, and like respecting, like, oh, you know, we're like, he'd say, oh, Motley Crue's just a punk band, or Poison would say, we're just it's punk songs slowed down a little bit. That was their shtick, you know, like everybody wanted to get a little bit of the high of how cool punk was. You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, because you realize that you're in a precarious position with these costumes. And so if you're starting to get some backslash and you smell Seattle coming, you're like, okay, well, we're actually doing a New York Dolls thing. We're punks. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, it's a great identifier. And I get why they would say that. And, you know, I mean, Nikki Sixx seems to be a pretty cool dude. And he likes writing songs, and Bad Religion is songwriting over everything else. So it makes sense to me.
And so to go into it, so you started with a band that most people look at as one of the early pioneers, Minor Threat, right? And
true.
From what I understand, which I think is so cool, the way you got into the band was that, well, you were one of the dudes that had a guitar that wasn't in a band. So that was good enough to join Minor Threat. Is that correct?
100%. Like our scene was so small. I mean, there might have been 50 people that I would see at shows total. Mm-hmm. And I believe I was the only person who wasn't in a band who knew how to play an instrument. I owned a guitar, but I wound up playing bass because the guitar player got there first. Mm-hmm. There was the timing. So I wound up with a bass, which I'd never played, but I said, how hard can it be? Right.
Right.
And it actually turned out to be hard. And I started playing it like a guitar. And someone pointed out that you play pretty much one string at a time is a good way to start with a bass and not, you know, full chords. But yeah, that's totally true. It was just, you know, it was just an after school band, honestly.
And then, but again, I'm the one that tries to do all the research, you know, everyone else, James is a working comic, so he just can rely on being funny and showing up and not doing any research. But
it's worked for me in years, but whatever. Yeah.
Good on.
You did not write songs in Minor Threat, and then you started writing songs later on in your career. Is that correct?
Well, I, you know, writing songs is kind of a weird term when you're talking about something that rudimentary. Like in Minor Threat, I have parts that I contributed. And if you were to look, I think it might say it on the label of the records, who writes who wrote what. Mm-hmm. So I have songwriting credit on some of the Minor Threat stuff, but Dag Nasty was the band that anyone would care about that I did after that. And that was one where I kind of started the whole thing from scratch. So I had mm-hmm. I wrote all the music and I wrote lyrics until a singer showed up who would be able to write lyrics so I wouldn't have to. That was basically it. And as soon as, you know, then and onward we go.
And then that leads actually quite nicely to Onward We Go. I think at this point right now, and I could be wrong, you're in Bad Religion. You are in Fake Names,
yes.
Right? You are in still Dag Nasty, right?
Yeah.
And
yep.
Beach Rats. So that's yep. that four or five? That's four?
That's four.
Am yeah. I leaving out anybody or is that everybody?
Well, I was thinking of forming a band over coffee this afternoon, you know, because I like odd numbers.
Uh-huh. Well, that
yeah, I'm meeting Vinny Stigma for coffee, so fuck it. I mean, he's in a bunch of bands. Why not?
So before you get into that, the question about that, because I have questions about being in so many bands, but it's funny you should bring up coffee because I could be wrong. I don't think you're a crazy coffee guy, but yet in the four or five interviews that I watched you, coffee was a topic.
I'm not a coffee snob.
Right.
But, you know, I'm not comfortable with Dunkin'.
Okay, like, I'm there with you.
There's a little bit of a level. Like I have I live in Asbury Park, New Jersey, and a couple of my friends own coffee shops. So, mm-hmm. you know, that's kind of my style. If you want to picture, you know, kind of a punk rock Asbury Park coffee shop, then you'll understand exactly what I'm drinking.
I think I see. But so you're not like I've become kind of a coffee douchebag in that I buy beans and I grind them and make my own espresso. You're not into it that much. You'll go
No. I am into it that much. I have like a $2,000 machine.
Oh, so then you're into coffee.
Makes espresso for me.
Yeah. Okay. So you're into it. Is it a Breville? Yeah.
No, it's a Jura.
Okay. All right. I got really into it. So I don't want to get off of the rails here. So back to the fact that you're in four bands, right?
Sure.
The question would be I know Bad Religion's newest record is like almost 3 years ago and Dag Nasty's is longer than that. So you're not really writing new songs for those bands, but do you try and think about when you're inspired, well, where is this going or what am I doing or how do I deal with what is next on the calendar or just living in the moment?
Well, I mean, it's the four things work out basically because only one of them plays any significant amount of shows, which is Bad Religion, which is, you know, my job. But to that point, I mean, there's a new Fake Names record coming out on coming out in March, on March 3rd, and their singles are starting to come out in November. And that was a record that myself and Michael Hampton, my writing partner, and Dennis Lixon, our singer, we wrote that whole record, you know, during COVID, basically. Mm-hmm. And so that was a lot, you know, COVID and beyond. And then prior to that, we had another record that came out in 2020, which is the same thing. So I was, again, writing more than I ever have in this phase of my life. Like it's, you know, basically since I moved to New Jersey. And Beach Rats had a record that just came out in July, full length. And we all write together for that. So, you know, on that front, I actually have been more active than I ever have. And now with these new records out, it's just about trying to be able to tour all the bands in a way that works. So we're threading those needles, but I know that I have a lot of Bad Religion next year and I finally have a Fake Names tour in April. So.
And is it because also of the lockdown, you had time that you could actually, I know you were growing shitty tomatoes in your own words, but.
Why would you do that? I can't believe I was that.
Especially by the way, the dumbest move, growing tomatoes in, heck, I would say arguably the state most synonymous with tomatoes.
Yeah, I was going to try cranberries first. And then I said, well, fuck it. Maybe I'll get tomatoes. Where can I find a good tomato in New Jersey? You know, but at that time you're in that mania. It's like, I was trying to learn to speak French. I was, you know, like doing handstands, trying to walk on my hands, anything to kill the time.
Wait a minute. I didn't realize. Do all the tomatoes come from New Jersey?
Beefsteak tomatoes are big in Jersey. That's where they're known for. Beefsteak tomatoes of Jersey.
It's a tomato country.
And I'm like, why not? Just do it in New Jersey. Who cares?
It is known. Although to me, if you're going to, again, I sound so shitty between my coffee and my a half marathon.
No, no.
But if you're going to grow tomatoes, get fucking some unique heirloom seeds and grow something you can't get.
Dude, don't do anything. There are people with carts who have been, their families have been doing this for 300 fucking years. You go to their cart and you buy the tomatoes from them and they put it in a paper bag and you go, oh my God, this is the best tomato. Why do I have to fuck with it? I don't know anything about tomatoes.
It's really true. You're not going to make a better tomato than someone doing it for fucking 400 years. It's very true.
Can I say that 15 years ago when I was in high school in Vegas, if you would have told me or I'd be interviewing a member of Bad Religion and a few minutes in, we'd be talking about fuck Dunkin' Donuts and beefsteak tomatoes.
Well, fuck Dunkin' Donuts makes sense. That's very punk rock. Fuck corporations. I get that.
No, it's not a corporation. It's just that their coffee sucks.
I know, but I'm saying the overall concept of fuck Dunkin' Donuts makes sense, I think.
I think if you form a fifth band today, it should be called Coffee Douchebag. I'm just going to call it back to what Ralph said. And if not, we're going to make it merch. We're going to make that merch for this show, baby.
Problem is, it's already called Funkin' Dunkin' or Fucking Dunkin' Dunkin'.
Fucking Dunkin'.
The shirts make themselves.
They make themselves. Always.
Yeah.
Never stand in the way of good merch, boys.
All right, before we go any further, I don't know about you, James, but I know Shannon loves this product. We're talking about Yo Kratom. Home of the $60 kilo. Have you ever dabbled in Kratom, James?
I love that you say dabbed, like I do bumps of it. Yeah, I have not, sir, but I it sounds like it's a good deal.
Shannon's a big fan. She likes this thing called the Trainwreck Blend. I know that. There's the only place you can buy full kilos of Kratom for $60. Just $60. Go to YoKratom.com. Amazing customer service, super fast shipping, and it's high quality curated Kratom delivered direct to you from YoKratom.com for just $60 a kilo. Stock up and party on. Let's get back into it. I like to do the research. I like this idea that you were asked to be a touring member of REM, but turned it down to become an actual member of Bad Religion. Is that correct?
This is true. True story.
Yeah, I mean, how long did you debate that? Was it because, I mean, I would assume, and I could be wrong, and I'm not shitting on Bad Religion, that the initial payday is probably better on that REM tour substantially. Yeah. So that takes a lot of thought process from you.
Well, it was a big one because, I mean, they were going to pay me a bunch of money and I would have access to this different echelon of music. So, you know, whereas I was just going to be the side guy, but who knows where that might lead to. I might want to be a side guy for another band on that level, you know, but the Bad Religion was what I knew and what I knew how to do best. And I saw a lot of long-term potential in the band and I just kind of just took a risk. I said, fuck it. I'm going to stay where I think I'm best utilized. Like I can fake playing like grown-ups, but the punk stuff actually just comes out of me.
Right.
The way it is. And I just bet on that. And yeah, hey, I won.
If you look back, let's say right now I was able to give you a crystal ball and you see that you would have ended up being a member of REM, would you regret that decision or you're just happy where you are?
Well, I wouldn't. I don't know how to. I don't know because the thing is I don't need a crystal ball because I know exactly what would have happened because they took a very good friend of mine in my stead. Mm-hmm. So I got to basically watch what was going on the whole time.
And that guy killed himself before the end of the tour.
He didn't kill himself, but you know, let's just say that, you know, it ended. He's fantastic, but you know, like all of us, he's had some problems with drugs and alcohol over his life. And there was no real growth potential. And then of course you have the fact that their breakup was, I don't know how long ago it was, 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah, right.
Sure, it's
a long
like
fucking
that.
Time ago. And it's also
what if he really would have killed himself? Would you have felt good with that comment? And then he killed himself after the tour and be like, yeah, he did.
Yeah, I would have looked like I did a lot of research. That's all. It would look like I did the research.
Yeah, I mean, I could have done that. I just really wasn't. I don't know how funny I'm supposed to be. I thought that was your thing. I'm just hanging out.
No, it's James's thing. It's not my thing for sure.
when they offer you that, I can't remember. I didn't see him on that tour. But isn't it like a U2 thing? Would you have played on the stage? A lot of those bands would put you underneath the stage. And I'm like, I couldn't imagine taking that gig.
No, I'd be on the stage and I'd be, you know, back off the front. And the job was to play bass when Mike Mills was playing guitar, doing something else, or playing mandolin. Or if, you know, backing up Peter Buck with songs that needed two guitars, but they didn't have two guitars. But I would have been, you know, I would have had, you know, I'd say 10% of the spotlight, and I'd be in my nifty, you know, I'd wear a suit and smile at people and have bleached hair. And, you know,
what if they would have offered you to sing the B-52 girls part for Shiny Happy People? Would you have gone on? If they would have given you that part, would you said, OK, I'm in?
Well, much like Bad Religion, I would have lied and said I could do it. And then I'd be on stage and I would deliver something that was substandard. And hopefully they just let me get better at it, you know, on the job.
Let me ask you, we talked a little bit about this with your publicist off air, and because you were super punctual for this meeting, for this interview. And I've seen you talk on shows about how nowadays, you know, you use an example of the casino shows for Bad Religion, right? They pay five times as much, but there's a third of the people, if that many, there. And that's why you do it. But regardless, if there's 50 people or 500 people or 5,000 people, whatever the number is, you're going to give 100% because that's what people came to see, right? And I get it. And also how you were right on time for this interview. It's interesting that the term of punk rock seems to be counterintuitive to all of that. Or is this just what happens to a punk rocker as they get older, that they start respecting the rules?
I don't know. I think that people's definition of punk rock and what I'm hearing is probably yours, is about this sort of like unbridled chaos, fuck the man.
Counterculture.
Yeah, but I mean, you're talking about that side of punk that's like throwing soup at a Rembrandt, you know, at the National Gallery. I mean, this was never my thing. I mean, the punk as I defined it, and everyone's defining it every day in a different way. But me, it was just, you know, be suspicious of normal people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was a self-expression. It was an artistic expression. It wasn't nihilistic, et cetera. So I think being on time and giving a shit now, I just think that's the kind of person I wound up being. I don't attribute that to punk. Being on time is respecting the people that are waiting for you.
Yeah. Did you do that even back in the, let's go to early Dag Nasty days, early Minor Threat days? Yeah. Like, oh, guys, it's a 9 show. We got to be on stage at 9, guys.
100%. Always have. Okay. Yeah, right, because that's the thing. And also, I want to be on stage. I'm not trying to, like, can we just wait? Or I'm not drunk enough? Or all of that shit. I want to be there as, you know, exactly when I'm supposed to be. Because that's the high for me, is the playing. So,
right. I like the idea that you said, which is fascinating. You started playing guitar very young. I think you said your parents gave you like a mock guitar, like at 5.
I had a mock guitar at like 5 or 6. Yeah. And they rented me an actual guitar when I was 8.
Right. And you said, this is wild if it's true, but I'm sure you're just mocking yourself, that you escalated quickly and you got great by the time you were 10, but you never got any better. You're at the level that you were when you were 10.
I will refine that without any self-deprecation. I got good really quick, like kind of like you see in movies, like, oh my God, he's a prodigy. I mean, I was tiny and I could play, you know, I could play a Lynyrd Skynyrd record with the solos when I was that little. Mm-hmm. When I say I peaked there, I mean, I'm fucking better. I can blow my little self out of the water now. But, you know,
if you left out the words out of the water, that would have been a really interesting sentence. Yeah, I can blow myself now.
Well,
right.
If we could do that, we wouldn't be here. yeah, but it's still just, I kind of got up to that, to kind of a semi-pro level really young. And then it helped that I was in touring bands by the time I was 15. So that, you know, it's like Olympic skating. I mean, the people who win have been at the rink since they were 3. You know, I just had the, you know, experience, I guess.
That's pretty cool. I mean, it was in you from the early on. Like, I, by the way, very early on realized, oh, I will never be good at guitar. Like, I tried and it just either I didn't have the desire to put in the hours to get as good as I should want it to be. And my brain wasn't wired for it. It's like one or the other. Some people just take to it and you get better quickly like you do. And then there's some people like a Steve Vai, who played 13 hours a day every day till he got to the point where he was a virtuoso, you know? So it depends on how badly you want it. I just knew that I wasn't ever going to be good or anywhere near how good I wanted to be.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't even try it. What happened for me is I was an only child with parents who hated each other. Mm-hmm. So I had a lot of free time. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of, you know, I'm sure I could get a legion of therapists past and present on here to further, you know, further define why I am the way I am. But that was it. It's like I played guitar because it was like it was the thing I could do. And luckily, I had friends at who were my age who were doing it too. One of them is the other guy, Michael Hampton, in Fake Names, the other right. guitar player. So I'm still playing with this guy that I was playing with when I was 8.
He got a guitar the same time you did. That's what happened, right?
I think he got his older sister had an acoustic guitar. Yeah.
That's cool. That's really cool. Yes, yeah, James.
No, it's interesting because I'm pretty sure when I was playing guitar in high school, I read a Guitar World interview with you. It was in one of the magazines. I'm pretty sure it was you. It was a whole group of Bad Religion. But I think it was you. This always stuck with me about guitar. You said that it's way cooler to put like a Van Halen sticker than like a Bad Brain sticker. I'm pretty sure it was you. And it always stuck with me because you're like, it's not cool just to put the band that everyone's listening to or is that viewed as the most punk. It's more punk to do a band that no one's listening to. And I went and found like a Gem in the Holograms cartoon sticker and put on my bass. And I looked like a fucking dum-dum, but I took pride in doing it.
I don't remember that at all. It sounds kind of Greg Hetson-y to me, but I will take Greg. It because I not only will I take it because I feel that it's true, but I have a picture of me playing in the Meat Men with a Van Halen sticker on my guitar.
There it is.
So that can't be coincidence. You know, I must have been doing that.
Also, by the way, speaking of that, it surprised me in listening to interviews with you, like you just mentioned Skynyrd. You talked about your love of that first Bad Company record, which I love, and how a lot of Dag Nasty riffs are basically taken from AC/DC. You know, that it shocks me or surprises me to hear punk legends doing a service to all these, I would call them mainstream rock bands. It's almost surprising to me. Is it weird that it's surprising to me, or is it my myopic view of the punk rock movement?
Well, I wouldn't call it a myopic view, but I would say that, think about this. When we were learning to play guitar, those of us who started young, that was what you learned to play. I mean, right. I liked the Beatles and I liked AC/DC.
From what I know, so that the first riff you ever learned was Taxman by the Beatles. I do my research.
That is in fact true. Your research is correct. And so it makes sense that if that's what's going on when you're learning, I mean, I wasn't picking up a guitar just in time for the Ramones. I mean, I just didn't. I missed it. And I think that, you know, I think a lot of, at least people in my age group have been influenced by much music that isn't punk. It's about guitar music for me, not necessarily punk. And, you know, but suffice to say that you don't really think of punk rock as this sort of sophisticated, captivating guitar music. What you think of is the group and the message. Right. And the singer, if he's really good or she's really good. But the virtuosity is not really a punk thing. And so I've still been, you know, I've been overplaying the whole time. I mean, it's hilarious.
Also,
I'm shocked that Ian from Minor Threat till this day will scream that his favorite musician was Ted Nugent. That
yeah, it surprises me. All that stuff.
Loves like Ted Nugent. Yeah.
It just seems so counterintuitive to who I would like. I think they all would say, no, if it's not punk or if it's not, you know, it doesn't super fast, I'm not interested or whatever, but I actually always believe if you're a musician, you're just influenced by music and it doesn't fucking matter. There's only two types of music, good and bad.
Ted Nugent, back when Ian was listening to him, you know, obviously prior to the cancellation and Psychosis, what it was raw and it was fast and it was music you skateboarded to before there was skate music. And that's where his thing from Nugent came from. He loved Nugent. He loved Van Halen. We'd listen to it in the van, like, on, you know, because that was like his, you know, his teenage thing. And it makes sense. I mean, I was never a Ted Nugent fan, fortunately, because, you know, I don't have anything. I don't have to worry about it. But it's just I think it's just how old we are. The time we're talking about. We're talking about the 70s now.
To further instill myself as not being the cool one on this call, I was a bigger Damn Yankees fan, which just shows you my age.
Which is the wildest statement anyone's ever said.
An actual Damn Yankees fan.
It's hard to believe. Like,
I like the Nuge. I like Jack Blades. What was Damocracy a big thing for you?
I just interviewed Jack Blades. I have you know 2 weeks ago, sir.
Yes. Okay. Well, good. He's good. He's good at his job.
And during the lockdown, we had Ted Nugent.
We had Ted Nugent. He was batshit crazy, but he was likable. Just batshit crazy.
Bow and arrow.
He shot something. Didn't he shoot something
while we're recording a podcast? Yeah, yeah, it was insanity. And he told me that he liked me and that I was full of piss and vinegar. And I'm like, that's great. If we sat down and talked about the world, you would hate me. But it's wonderful.
Yeah, it's okay. Well, look, it's totally fine. I mean, like, I don't need
it's
to
talk. Separating the art from the artist. That's what I say. It's hard to do sometimes, but what are you going to do? Anyway, we'll move forward. Here's something that, by the way, a shocking thing that you would think, what would Brian and Ralph have in common? We both wrote a song in our childhood, ironically called Bus Stop. That is so weird.
Kids of the City, it speaks to you, doesn't it? Just
me and my brother and my cousin, we wrote a song called, and it was basically at the car wash, but we sang it at the bus stop and we thought we were making up a song.
Well, you were kind of, at least, as, you know, that would count as making up a song now if you're a SoundCloud person. But, did you equate the bus stop as like your ticket out of Nowheresville, the freedom?
It was more like we were getting angry, angry waiting for the bus was our motif. That was our take on it.
What a protest.
Yeah, I think ours might not have even been that deep. It was probably just an object like lamp, bus stop, shoe.
I also, by the way, this sounds a little douchey to me. Your favorite guitar riff of all time is American Jesus. And I feel like that's a little self-serving. You know, I mean, I know they existed before you were in the band and blah, blah, blah. But I don't know. Do you stand by that?
Let me tell you a little something about marketing, Ralph. Now, when you're being interviewed by a publication and the whole point of the interview is to get people excited about the new Bad Religion tour coming up.
Okay.
A good way to do that is to feature one of my favorite riffs, which is American Jesus, which I can say because I was not in the band when they wrote it.
Right. It makes it okay.
By no means is that my favorite riff. I don't want to muddy the waters here. I'd like some people to come see the band. I'd like to play American Jesus for them. And that's where we'll leave it.
Okay. Fair enough.
Rappers did it for years, Ralph. It's a beautiful move.
I'm going to try and edit this joke as down as quickly as possible. There's a guy with a cross on his cup and a guy with a Jewish star on his cup in front of the Vatican begging for money, right? And the guy with the cross has an overflowing cup of money, and the guy with the cross of the Jewish star has no money in his cup, right, in front of the Vatican. And the Pope comes over and says to the guy with the Jewish star, you're never going to make money here with that symbol on your cup. And he walks away, and then that guy turns to the guy with the cross and says, Murray, look who's trying to teach the Rosenbergs about marketing.
Well, I mean,
You still got it, Ralph.
It's a very old joke.
It's a very old joke, and I think that probably at this time in history, one that you might not want to really be repeating, because there seems to be, I don't know, this sort of wave of fascism that's coming up.
That's true.
You might be able to see, and God, wouldn't you know it, now there's all this anti-Semitism, too. I mean, you know, just as a professional broadcaster.
Well, as a somewhat professional broadcaster and somewhat Jewish, I feel like I can get away with that joke. I don't know if that's true.
That's how it starts, man.
That's another merch. Somewhat broadcasters, somewhat Jewish.
Yeah.
Let's start selling the shit, Ralph.
I like it. Oh, by the way, another fascinating thing. You were in Samhain with Glenn Danzig.
Awesome.
Love
briefly,
it.
Briefly. I was in what was to be Samhain briefly.
Right, briefly. That's just the amount of legend that you are weaving your way in and out of. You're the punk rock of what's his name? The Tom Hanks
Zelig
movie. Yeah, like so there you go. I was thinking punk rock. What's the Tom Hanks movie? Forrest Gump. There
Forrest
we go.
Gump.
Boom. Move forward.
I prefer Zelig. He was more mysterious.
I think Zelig's way cooler.
Probably
than
a lot cooler
Gump.
Than Forrest.
Yeah. 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 I mean, sure, but that's it was a small world. Mm-hmm. The scene was small, and this is a long time ago. And like, Glenn Danzig is one of my absolute favorite singers. I think he's a fucking genius. Mm-hmm. I love the Misfits. I love Samhain. I mean, you know, I liked his Elvis record. He's rad. But back then, I was like 18. He was probably 21, and we were trying to put together some super kind of minor threat, you know, from the Misfits group.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a bunch of songs, and I think he quickly realized that he didn't need me. He could have someone like, you know, he could get Erie Vaughan, who lived in Lodi. Why do you need to commute for this blonde, like smart ass when you've got your people right there? And so that's all it was. I mean, it's mm-hmm. like he was smart.
Well, that leads me to the question, like, how did you end up now living? I don't know how many years it is living in New Jersey. Like, what was that decision? Why'd you do that?
I lived in D.C. for a long, long time. And my wife and I lived, right in the city, in a row house, mm-hmm. as one does, right? So we lived in a neighborhood that would be, I don't know, it wasn't that nice. So I don't know what, I don't know how to categorize what where it is in Brooklyn now, because everything is nice in Brooklyn, but you get the point. And we had been coming to Asbury Park for our summer vacations, like going to the beach, because she's from here, even mm-hmm. though she has no family here anymore. So we'd been doing that for, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 years. And eventually it's like, why don't we just move here? Like, what is the point of not, what, you know, this place is cheap. It's cool. At the time, it was cheap and it was, you know, under the radar, and there's an ocean right there. And it just was like, we should just do this now. And we did it. We just took the, you know, I took the risk. I took Bad Religion instead of REM. I'm like, fuck it, let's get out of here. And I moved away from, you know, everything I knew, and we've made new friends, and best decision I ever made. I love it here.
Let me ask you, how do you feel about what I would call the poppy punk movement that happened? Like, we just had Fall Out Boy on the show not that long ago. We had, what was his name that you didn't like? You didn't like his attitude, James.
Oh, you're going to start a fight. This was a while ago. He's probably friends with the guy. Or Fat Mike. Shit on the Ramones, and it really soured me. It soured me like no one's business. And Ralph could tell on the interview that my body language just changed. I just became a 75-year-old man within seconds. I was like, really, dog?
Well, realize that Fat Mike is a good marketer too, and a provocateur. Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, that's what it is. But
of the newer ones, like, you know, the Fall Out Boys of the world, you know, the My Chemical Romances that are taking elements of punk and elements of, I guess, emo or whatever you want to call it, modernizing and pop-sizing?
Yeah, and getting huge. And I love it. I love My Chemical Romance. I think that they're really good. Black Parade was a really cool album.
Great record.
I haven't listened to any real Fall Out Boy other than singles. I just haven't. It's not like I'm trying not to.
Right.
But, you know, I have some people who work for Bad Religion have worked for them, and they seem to be nice people, and that's great. But all of this, you know, the further normalizing and mainstreaming of punk in whatever form it takes is good for me.
Right, of course.
And I am 100% behind it. I love seeing people go take something that I helped make and make something new out of it. I mean,
right.
How cool is that?
I like the idea that there is nothing but thousands of discount T-shirts available because the 40th anniversary of Bad Religion got cut short due to COVID. Is that actually true, or that's just also good marketing?
No, that's not true, because we're good businessmen, and we would never sit on 100,000 pieces of cotton at any time in our lives. So let's just say that they're made to need. So there was no, all there was probably the guy took the screen and scratched out the zero and put a two.
There you go.
Yeah, but
that would make it tape. Yeah. That works.
Honestly, I have no idea what we sell. I never go out there.
And the book came out. Is it a year and a half, 2 years ago? The Do What You Want, Bad Religion book. Is that 2 years ago? When did that
come out? I think it came out in 2020. Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard to. I lose track of time. Everything I think was a month ago ends up being like, oh, that was 3 years ago. You know.
Yeah. Me too.
So was that book? Do you feel I'll be honest. Usually I try and read a book of a band before, but I was away, you know, in Iceland, everybody. So I didn't get a chance to, but do you feel it's an accurate representation? It's more of a conversation between all you guys as well, right?
It's a bit of that. I think it is a very good book for a Bad Religion fan or someone mm-hmm. who wants to learn about Bad Religion. I saw something like kind of like Trouble Boys, like, or, you know, kind of a more elevated, you know, version, a biography, but, you know, the problem with that is you have to be really famous for anyone to want to do that. Mm-hmm. And we had our friend Jim Rulin did a great job of, you know, basically compiling this history, which is what it is. So, you know, it's not I just don't think of it as a work of importance. I think it's a excellent companion.
Is there an audiobook available? Because I only listen to books.
There must be.
Okay. All right. That means you didn't VO it, I guess, is what that means.
Oh, no.
Okay. Fair enough. I like, by the way, this is something I've said 1,000 times, and I could not agree more, that nobody wants to see a fat, uninterested guy phoning in the hits. That your job as a rock star is try and stay in shape and try and be enthusiastic. And that's really, to me, more important than sounding good. to be honest.
I think there's, I don't think it's more important, but it's important to give a shit. Yeah. And you can't fake it either. I mean, I guess you can. It would be nice if you just, you know, well, I can, that's not true. I can fake it in the sense, like if something is horribly wrong in my inner monitors or one of my guitars, I'm playing on four strings all of a sudden or something, I make it so it's not the audience's problem.
Right.
Because they don't know. And why be like, that's not cool. That's weak.
Right.
Like just smile, finish the song and grab another guitar from your smiling friend on the side of the stage. And then just
also
like,
you've been faking it that you've been somewhat enjoying this interview for the last 40 minutes. So I give you credit. You know what?
It's actually, I'm at about 70%. This is good. I like this. It's fine. But yeah, I think it's important. You know, I want to go see, music is really important to me, and I'm sure it's important to many of the people who come to see Bad Religion specifically because we're this, you know, we have this huge history and our political stance. And so the least we can do is be as good as we possibly can.
Oh, fair enough. Now, I don't know if this was you or Greg or someone in the band that said this, but you said, I saw an interview with, and I got confused. I don't remember who said it, but the biggest misconception of Bad Religion is that you're all smart.
I think that was me. Yeah, I'm an idiot for starters. So there is a thing of like, well, you know, we travel with an autoclave and then there's a test tube washer in the front of the bus. And, you know, we have a trailer where there's our library. It's like bullshit. We're old punk guys and we have a great time. And we're just, you know, I think we're funny. The guys, just being with these guys, we're laughing the whole time. And it's just, you know, we don't take ourselves very seriously at all. The only thing that's serious is the music, but the people making it, like, come on. I don't have time for that kind of stance.
Do you remember that SNL sketch where there was like an old guys, they got together for their daughter's wedding and they got their band together, but they were a punk band? That was a great sketch. Yeah. You had to relate to that sketch now, I imagine, for sure.
Yeah. He had a much earlier one of the Queen haters, which I thought was pretty cool too, with Candy. That was probably SNL. Second City.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know that one. And it's the same concept, I guess.
Second City was a sort of, it was in Chicago.
So I know what Second City is. I just don't know that the Queen's Hater sketch.
Hater sketch was similar. Just imagine a punk band with Martin Short as the lead singer and John Candy playing drums dressed in punk costumes.
Oh, okay. Fun. Yeah, I would like that.
Just alone, that image alone is probably worth it.
So Age of Unreason now, we are nearing 3 years ago, I believe, right?
Yeah.
Or maybe almost four at this point, you know, 2019, early 2019. So whatever that math comes out to be. Is there plans for a new record? Is there, because I know that, you know, the tours are happening. You're doing a bunch of dates in Australia and a sort of show in New Zealand. Like you guys are getting around. Is there a plan for new material?
There's never a plan for new material. There's rarely a plan of any kind.
There's never a plan. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, there really isn't. I mean, I know this, that we still have a lot of places we need to play that we didn't get to because the pandemic shut us down. Mm-hmm. So in a sense, we're like kind of going and you know, honoring our tickets, even though we gave them all the money back 3 years ago. But, you know, the point is we want to come and touch base with all these places. Also, it's really when Brett and Greg, who are the guys who write the songs, I mean, it's really just when both of them have enough stuff that they think it might be able, you know, they have something that they want to say, or there might be enough songs to make a record. And sometimes a record will come a year and a half after the one before it.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's 4 or 5 years. It's just about how it goes. I mean, the luxury we have is we don't require new material to tour.
Right.
But the way you become you, the way you stay relevant is to continue to make new material.
Yeah, or else you become a heritage band that nobody that has a life cycle of its own.
I don't want to be a Bad Religion cover band. I don't want to be a greatest hits band. And enough, you know, that's a fine living. And I'm not, you know, no disrespect to anybody who's successfully pulling that off. But the point of this is that you have to stay curious and you have to keep pushing. And that's, you know, that's a really big part of why Bad Religion, I think, has this long term success.
It's awesome. Yeah, I mean, it's also amazing how it's one of the few bands where the name always invokes cool. It never became uncool. You could argue that the Ramones at one point was uncool. You know, they're kind of cool again now, but there was a time where
I'm sorry, James. You can never argue that the Ramones were uncool.
There was a time where I felt like they were like made fun of them a lot. People was like they were the go-to band to make fun of. But not
just
anymore.
That mic, Bubba. That's all it was, that one time.
Yeah, no, the Ramones are to be revered and worshipped.
I love them. I'm just saying.
All of us who are without them would not be here. But yes, I see your point. It's, you know, when they started, I guess maybe when the Urban Outfitters t-shirts.
That's what I mean. When you started seeing Flintstones and it said Fred Barney, you know, and there was, it became a caricature of itself. Is that a fair way to look at it?
Yeah, but that's pop culture's fault. It's not the Ramones' fault.
Right. But I'm saying, back to my initial statement, Bad Religion, it was never not cool, that name, to have it on a shirt, is all I'm saying.
Well, it's not a very cool name when you think about it. It's kind of dumb. Bad Religion. And also, we have a logo.
Well, especially if you say it like that, Brian.
If you say it like that, it kind of takes the shine out of it. But yes.
Oh, come on. Well, what's bad? Religion is bad. Bad religion. Mm-hmm. It's not quite as sophisticated as you would think from the minds of the people who are writing these songs, but that's about being 15 in a garage. That's what you write because it's provocative. And our logo hasn't done us a lot of favors. I mean, the cross with a big slash through it. So, you know, we've managed to kind of we've skirted the mainstream effectively and long enough where it's just cool.
Yeah, it is cool. And it's funny. There's certain bands that have said, like, I'm trying to think of another band that I would put that in that level. Does anything jump out at you, James? Like,
the two greatest punk band names ever, Bad Religion, Dead Kennedys.
Dead Kennedys is a great name.
It's the best.
Yeah. I get that. I like the name Bad Religion. It just seems level one. Dead Kennedys is a better name. That's a mission statement. That scared me. When I got that first record, I was like, I didn't even know if I could bring it home. It was
That is funny, though, that there is no danger in music anymore. No, nothing you can do would be dangerous now. Like that, you're right. You would bring home a record and you'd want to hide it from your parents, or there'd be a sticker slapped on it for a few years that you can't buy. Or you can't go see this because there's protesting outside whoever's performing wherever. That's never happening again, I don't think, ever.
There's one guy. It's happening right. It's Kanye. Kanye is that dangerous, crazy wild card.
That's for a whole different thing. That's not for his music.
I mean, he's done some wild albums. Like,
I'm just saying nobody was protesting his music. I'm saying that I think about like Manson, we're probably the last big one that this happened to, where there was protests in front of arenas. He's, you know, against God and religion, and that's not happening anymore ever again.
It's different times. It's like we can't tell anymore because this is screen time, and these are people who are engaged in music at that intensity tend to be younger, and they grew up with different synapses being wired in a different way because they're looking at a fucking screen. No, it's just different. It's not bad, but I think that widespread acceptance of things that normally would be pretty deviant. Is because you can see anything you want anytime in 1 second.
Yeah,
and
I agree with that.
To do for decades. So
we won't know how it rewires our brains and reaffects our pathway for the rest of our future for a long time. You actually said that screen time is the number one challenge for the youth of today, right? That's what you did say somewhere.
If I said that sounds pretty cool. I'll go with that.
Yeah, I do my fucking
same interview with the Van Halen sticker. Just so you know,
just go with it.
Put
Brian.
It all together.
And then last question before we go to the first, and I'm pretty sure this is true, although I haven't actually heard you say it outright, is that you are vegan. Am I right?
I'm a vegetarian with leaning vegan.
Leaning vegan. Vegan.
And the reason I'm leaning is that I moved to New Jersey, and there is pizza here that cannot be denied. And so I've let myself get a little dairy into it because, you know, I'm not a political, I'm not using my diet in a political way. It's just because I want to feel better. And I kind of just got grossed out at meat. Like it wasn't a big statement.
It's not. So you're not doing it ethically. You're doing it physically.
No, okay. I mean, it's nice to be ethical, but I mean, no, I'm doing it because I'm doing it because I feel better. And all my fucking old man shit is in good shape. The cholesterol and all that shit. I'm just like I'm testing good. And
your only foray into vegetarianism is pizza, or are there other things?
Well, what pizza does is it opens the door to dairy. So yes, I can have a bowl of Raisin Bran.
Okay, but you don't like it. I actually prefer the oat milks and the almond milks over regular milk.
I don't. The only milk situation in my life is a cereal situation, and even that is like a monthly, once a month thing. Okay. But coffee is all black. There's really not a lot of dairy in me. It's really just the pizza or just, you know, Italian food in general. Because I'm sitting here you know, this is pretty much the apex.
Right
around within 50 to 60 miles of where I am. I think it's the best Italian food in the world. And I've been to Italy a whole lot.
By the way, you want to get more? The listener hate me for my white douchebaggery.
Sure.
I make my own almond milk. How about that?
Well, it sounds like you're industrious and don't want to pay those Whole Foods prices.
How about that, James?
This is the wildest interview I've ever been a part of. This is the most adult fucking interview of all time.
I get shit on so much for this stuff. I make my own nut butters and shit. Boy, do they love to make fun of me at the old Gas Digital Studios for that shit, James.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. Wait till I go back to the studios. I'm going to make fun of him more.
Because you said that you wanted to learn some good vegan recipes during lockdown. Did you learn anything good?
Yeah, I got a bunch of books. I have a lot of friends who have been vegan forever. And so, as soon as I kind of sounded the alarm, like I'm off the ribs, folks, you know. I got some cool cookbooks, but also just things I started to make. It turns out I love to cook. And it turns out that I was making a lot of stuff already that didn't need to have meat in it.
Right, for sure. So, I mean, I'm not vegetarian or vegan. I just think we all eat too much fucking meat. That's the problem. I think everybody eats. It should be 70-30 meat versus vegetables, but in the other direction. Everyone's doing 70 meat, 30 vegetables. It should be 30 meat, 70 vegetables.
Everyone in America is doing the wrong thing all the time anyway. So
that's probably
what you're
true.
Talking about is a European model, but
And by the way, just to get a plug in, I'm opening up my other podcast on health and wellness, and we're opening a store on 3rd Avenue, 69th Street that is vegan. It's going to be fantastical. Good Sugar opening in about 3 weeks. So you're more than welcome. Your first meal's on me, sir, if you ever make it down there. I'll tell you that.
I would love to, and I'll definitely go there and I'll drop your name.
We'll see what happens. They'll cart you out immediately. All right, got to do the first. Before we do the first, James, you have an idol on the show. Any other questions before we do the first?
Well, it was weird because when I left, I feel weird because Minor Threat, legendary Straight Edge, which I have a weird story about that. I didn't know what Straight Edge was early on in life. Like at 18, I'm at a party across the hall from where I was at. And I was drinking beer and everyone kept dropping hints about Straight Edge and staring at my beer can. I had no idea what it was. So I was a beer douchebag there. It's weird. So I was listening to prepare for this, the 2 12 inches as an album last night.
Yeah.
After I left another party, because that's what I do. And I had liquor in me and I felt really weird. Was there ever that with that band, resenting people drinking?
Oh, God. You're going way overboard. Those are just songs.
Yeah.
And the reason I didn't drink is because I was too young and I didn't hate my parents. So I didn't break into the liquor cabinet. Like this was just basically the statement was don't be a fuck up. And it didn't really have it was not ever supposed to be this set of rules or a life system or marauding gangs in champion sweatshirts with X's all over them, knocking beers out of people's hands. People drank at our shows. We had tons of people in our scene drank. It did not matter. It just got everything. It just got blown out of proportion. And then the next thing you know, you got Ray Capo up there and fucking leading a new youth movement. And, it's morphed into this cool guy thing. And remember, punk was guys who weren't cool. That was,
You described the party I was at. That's how everyone was dressed. It was insanity. And two girls who looked like witches. That was it.
Well,
I tried talking to them. It didn't work out. What do you
think? Well, it's because you were drunk.
Story of my life, baby.
We got to hit the first right now.
The first time ever I saw Concert Detroit's had sex.
The name of the show is the SGR Show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Show. We've asked every guest this since the dawn of time, their first experience with all three. We start with rock and roll, but here's what we mean by that. The first concert you went to, ideally on your own volition, that we're going to know, not some, maybe James would know, but not something we've never heard of. The first one you went to hey, I want to go see that band.
Okay. Well, the problem is that is a huge other story that I'm tired of telling.
Okay. Fair
enough. The first concert I went to was a Santana concert and I wound up playing at the concert. And your research will show you this story over and over again, but that's really true. So that was the first sanctioned arena. We have tickets. We have a ride kind of concert. Everything else had been incidental prior to that.
Fair enough.
Older dudes jamming at school. kind of stuff.
Okay, fair enough. And now the first drug you ever did after weed, unless weed was not your first drug.
Well, it must have been pills of some sort. It must have been, I first smoked pot when I was like, I don't know, maybe 22. And oh, I was living in Hermosa Beach. That's kind of a surfer lifestyle in California. So it probably was like a Xanax or, you know, something like that. I don't think it was any, it definitely wasn't some kind of heavy opiate. It would have been some other like light version. Transient.
Okay. Yeah, in the 70s, wasn't it all about barbiturates? I only know the word. I don't know what that means.
But this wasn't the 70s. This was
Know the word. I don't know what it means.
This is mid 80s. I did whatever pills someone's mom would have in their cabinet.
Fair enough.
Mothers will help us, baby.
And now the first time you had sex.
The night I got my driver's license. Yes.
Glorious day.
I got my driver's license and I had my mom's car for the first time. Wow. And I drove it to a punk show. And there was a woman there who I had thought was kind of cute, but I think I became more attracted to her because I had a car. Mm-hmm. She lived in Maryland and I lived in DC. And the show is at the 930 Club in DC. So I drove her home and there I had my first experience of the wonders of punk love.
In the car?
No, in her house.
In her house. Okay.
Yeah, I think she was a little older than me. Mm-hmm. She could have lived in a group house because I was 16. So she could have been 8. I would think it was her parents' house, but just nobody was around or that was the standard that they set.
And did you ever see her again after that or was it one off?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I worked with her in an ice cream store. At a Baskin Robbins.
Just keep getting better.
That's great.
Yeah. We worked together at a Baskin Robbins in DC. But this was, you know, I think that I was a ship passing in the night for her. Mm-hmm. And, we didn't, when we were working, that was off the table. Like it didn't even come up. We were just busy talking about punk and being punk. Ice cream to punk people.
Baskin Robbins. Guess what they're merged with? Motherfucking Dunkin' Donuts.
Damn.
Mind blown, dog.
Now he can't even walk into one anymore because he's pissed off.
It's all over.
Man.
Jesus Christ.
You could follow him at Brian Baker S. Plural. Well, Brian Baker's, even though I don't think you bake much, right? I don't know. I could be wrong.
I'm not good at it. Yeah, it's Brian Baker's is my thing on Instagram. And Brian X, as in straight edge, Baker is my Twitter.
Do you ever get confused? Do you ever do an interview where you're all set up and ready to go and they think you're Brian Baker, the football coach?
No. They think that I'm the punk rock guitar player who's been bothering them for 42 years. No.
I'll tell you only because when I typed in
the problem was the Sprint guy.
Was his name Brian Baker?
His name was Brian Baker.
No.
Oh, no.
Yeah. A lot of the early Sprint commercials. That's what that actor was named. And we got another bigger problem than all of that. Is that Brian Backer was Rat in fucking Fast Times.
Oh, wait. His last name is Baker?
Correct. And so people are like, well, Brian was in Fast Times. It's like, no, I wasn't. That was an actor named Brian Backer.
That was Ratner?
Yeah.
Mark Ratner was Brian Backer? No. Is that right?
Yeah. It's like the fucking Weasley protagonist.
I forgot his name now, but that's funny.
Yeah.
That's wild. Who knew that? Okay, that's
yeah, well, I sure did.
That's unbelievable.
Because of all the abuse.
Okay, so you can follow him at Brian Baker's or Brian X on Twitter. The Bad Religion tour, which is doing one date, some big punk rock festival coming up in early November, and then a bunch of dates overseas. And I'm sure that monster keeps going and going till you guys can't do it anymore. And then the 4,000 other bands he's in from Fake Names, Beach Rats. And by the way, even though I don't think you're in the band anymore, check out those first two Junkyard records. They're fucking good shit also.
I'll have you know that though I do not perform with Junkyard, I am still a band member. And I contribute writing to their records.
Wow.
And they are better than they've ever been. So if you get a chance to go see Junkyard, you should. And
well, I will tell you this, sir. You are not listed as a member on their website anymore.
Well, you know what? Maybe I'll talk to their web guy, but I know where I stand with my men from Austin.
Anything else you want to plug before we go around the room, sir?
I would like to thank you for not making me drive to Manhattan at night and sit in a small room and watch a bunch of guys get fucked up on White Claw.
Did you watch an episode? Is that what happened?
Of course I did.
Which one did you watch?
I don't remember.
Oh, man.
Something to do with the adult industry. But the point
man.
Is, I'm so grateful that you could do that. You could do this from my house.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Believe me, whenever I hear someone's driving distance, I get agita that they won't come in. But I'm like, all right, it's fucking Brian Backer. we got to say yes, you know, so just an honor to have you on. But I'm even more happy that you watched our stupid show. So thank you so much for that.
It was fun.
James, your plugs?
Yo, man, the James Madden on Instagram and YouTube, and watch my special, The Check Spot, where I perform while everyone pays their bills and doesn't pay any attention. And it's the most punk rock thing I've ever done. It's in black and white. It's fucking cool. Check that shit out. And New Year's Eve, I'll be opening up for Chris DiStefano at the Paramount Theater in Long Island, dog. It's going to be wild, man.
All right. Cool. All right. Follow me over at I Am Ralph Sutton. My other podcast on health and wellness, The Good Sugar Podcast, comes out every Monday. And we're opening up our first location on 3rd Avenue and 69th Street, where Brian is going to come in and get a free meal.
Yep.
It's opening in November, which is just a few weeks away. And how about this? James, why don't you pick a Bad Religion song? Because we end every week by adding it to the strshow.com/playlist. And then we will go out. Brian, thank you so much for being a part of this. And we'll see everybody next time. James, what song will it be?
Oh, that's a good call. Let's go with... Let's do Handshake.
One. Okay, we'll add Handshake to the playlist. And we'll see everybody next time on the SDR Show.
Listening to the SDR Show.